Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of June 17th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a cool Sunday evening is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy? How are you doing?
Well, you say cool, I say warm, and I'm hot. I'm ready to go, babe.
You're hot, I'm freezing. it's supposed to be 30 degrees every day. It's supposed to be summer, and it's not. I want my money back.
Oh. Yeah, well, I don't have an answer for that. Well, it's the rainy season, which means typically cool and clammy weather, disgusting wind and rain, and all those other fun things.
Fun stuff, but yeah, today we had none of the above. It was really beautiful, and then now it's cold.
Yeah.
So I'm not liking this. But you know what? Today I had thought of this. I was writing a story, and I thought of this really great lead, and then okay. I lost it.
You lost it as in you lost the your lead. Cool and blew no, your cool? You lost the lead.
I lost the lead just like my favorite team here in Japan.
you buried the lead somewhere?
I didn't bury it.
That's
some
for your
really
coworker
bad pitching
to do.
Buried it, yeah.
I see.
Anyway, all right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Stefan Romero of the Oryx Buffaloes. We're going to talk about that team. We're going to talk about Interleague, the top candidates for Rookie of the Year, and a whole bunch more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, last weekend I went out to Jingu Stadium and had a couple of nice chats with Stefan Romero and met Tyler Epler and got to talk to some of the Buffaloes guys. And, you know, and a reminder of all the people I've promised to do interviews with whom I haven't. So, so Taguchi's on my list. And it's sort of like I told him, okay, we'll get that going on by phone or something. And he's going, yeah, good deal. And I'm thinking, when am I going to find time to manage all this stuff? Yeah, and I just started a course on baseball analytics, distance education thing, and that's between the website and my work and my other interviews. And it's like, I don't want to complain because I don't have children. And I think I'm living in a blessed dimension in that respect in terms of being able to make my own schedule. So it's just a challenge for me, but I think it's an ordinary challenge. Nothing superhuman like parents need to learn.
Oh, that's interesting. But I like how I always tell the listeners how busy you are and you decide to take on some other challenge, and I'm thinking, you know, isn't there enough on your plate already? There's not even any room for gravy, and here's this guy adding, you know, a course, and I'm like, okay,
yeah. Well, when I opened this week's assignment, and it was four chapters of downloading a different database than I use, and the code needed to run it and organize it, and I would have had to forgive people in the train for staring if they saw my head spinning like it was in The Exorcist or something. So I went out to chat with Stefan Romero, and it was such a pleasure. He's such a really good-natured guy. And we had a nice talk about a lot of different things, of which some made it into the interview and some didn't. But pardon me for I was trying to explain some concepts that were not coming to my brain very easily. So I go on a bit. So please excuse me about that. So anyway, let's hear what Stefan has to say about some different things going on in Japan, and then I'll have some more comments later.
Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Stefan Romero of the Oryx Buffaloes. It seems like you've been here for ages already.
Yeah, it seems like it. This is my third season here, so I mean, it flies by. Just remember coming over 2 years ago and being new and fresh and meeting you for the first time, and I feel like you're just a regular now every time I just see you.
Yeah, so, it's not that often. I mean,
it's not that often, only when I'm up in the Tokyo area.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, so it's always a pleasure, and always, you know, I watch you with the fans here. It's the fan experience here is a little different than it is in the States. How easy was that to get used to?
It was really easy, other than, you know, all the chanting during your at-bat. You're not used to, I guess, music or a lot of commotion while you're at-bat. But, you know, it takes a lot of, I guess, when you're in the zone, it really meshes in together because it's nonstop for both sides. And, you know, you get used to it fairly quickly. And it's actually was beneficial for me just because it felt like it just drowned out a lot of, I guess, inside noise in my head. Oh. So just, you know, just focusing more on my plate appearance or, you know, on the field. So for me, it was actually beneficial. In the States, you know, you could get a mixed bag. You could get no fans and one fan really sticks out to you, or you could get a lot of fans and it has the same effect. It drowns everything out and you get more in the zone. So I feel it's more comfortable playing in front of bigger fans here and louder fans. So
that's interesting. I hadn't really occurred to me much, but I know that you know, one of the things that it's one of the things you get here that you're not going to get really anywhere except a few AAA cities and the majors, home, not even a lot of major leagues, is big crowds, big noisy crowds. I mean, for a young kid coming up, if you're, you know, Chris Martin told me that, you know, when he came up and he had to make these adjustments that he'd never been able to make in the majors because they're using a different ball and he's there and he was a starter and now he's a reliever and here he's got his role is set and now he's having to make adjustments in big crowds and big games. So when he went to the majors, it was like, okay, I just did what I did in Japan mentally.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, if that's one thing. If you come over and you do well and you excel here and you go back to the States, I feel like you have that set mentality and that routine that gets you in that comfort zone, especially playing in front of 25, 30, 40,000 fans. When you get to the big leagues, you know, you just refer back to Japan and turn it back on and you feel more comfortable and at ease. So I feel like a lot of guys going back to the States like Mikolas have success.
Yeah, because obviously the other thing was that you get into a role here because with many teams, you're pretty much, if you succeed, you pretty much keep you in one role.
Yes.
Whereas in majors, it depends if they need a starter, you're a starter.
Yeah.
If they need a right fielder, you're right fielder today, and you're first baseman tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. You have a specified role, and you stick to that role for the most part. There's a lot of, questions when you're back in the States, and you don't really have a set role. But here, you know, guys get comfortable into that role, and they have a routine to go in it day in and day out, and they just go on with their day.
Now, what are some of the things you can learn from Japanese baseball? Because I keep trying to explain this, but I haven't played in Japanese baseball, but what are some of the things that guys coming here can learn? Because I get different, I've asked this question to 100 different people, and I've got about 75 different answers.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mixed bag of things. I mean, for pitchers, it might be different. For hitters,
sure,
One thing might be different. But just work ethic. The guys here take it as, you know, more of a business. It's a job. At the same time, when you're doing really well, everything's fun and it's a game again. But when you're doing, you know, not so well, you got to get in that grind mentality, that business mentality, like, okay, I got to keep working. This is my job. This is my livelihood. So I got to get back to where I know I could perform. So, you know, there's, like I said, a mixed bag of things, but especially guys coming over from the States, just it's the Japanese way. Pretty much you have to conform. They might conform a little bit to you because they know that you're a foreigner, but you got to conform to the everyday tasks that they ask of you, because, you know, that's one thing that they really take into mind is respect and, you know, respecting the way they play the game here is I won't say a lot different, but it's a little different than it back home in the States. So if you could just, you know, respect that it's a cultural thing and you conform to the baseball ways here, you know, you'll be a lot successful.
Yeah, Japan has a bit of an authoritarian tint to it for sure. And although, you know, reading things, I have, again, I'm not that familiar with the major leagues, but reading things about life in the major leagues as a rookie, I'm thinking, well, this isn't so different. You know, rookie do this and rookie do that, and rookie don't sit down when everybody else is standing.
Exactly. But the thing is, if you come from the States here, you're not necessarily a rookie.
Right.
Because, you know, guys here view you as almost like a superstar. You're like, okay, if he played in the big leagues in the States, you know, coming to Japan baseball, you know, you're viewed as a guy that's a veteran already, even if you're a younger guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't have those little, you know, do this, do that, but at the same time, you got to respect your higher authority, like your manager, your coaches, the front office, whatever they tell of you. You know, they want to keep it as relaxed for you as possible so you could thrive in the environment, but at the same time, you got to take consideration to what they ask of you as well.
Yeah, certainly the relationship between the players and the coaches here is different. You don't see the, like, practice today, who says?
Exactly. One major difference was day games, like today, for instance. We're playing 2 o'clock game. In the States, we would have just had BP in the cages and, you know, get ready for the game. No infield, outfield. Here we got full-on BP, full-on 30-minute warm-up, full-on BP, and then infield and outfield after. It gives you about 20 minutes before game time. So you got a lot on your plate. So as a foreigner, you got to learn how to conserve your energy and you know, pick your spots where you get your work in, and, you know, get prepared for the game.
That's interesting, because, you know, when the Japanese players go to America, they've got to learn how to conserve their energy in a different way, you know, and they have to conserve their energy despite not doing all the workouts because of the travel and the schedules.
Exactly.
Training is different, and so lots of things. So you get used to lots of different things, makes you a little more adaptable, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. You know, especially if you play here in the States and here, and then you go back to the States, you know, you have a repertoire of just, you know, how to prepare mentally, physically for the game, and what works for you best, because you experience two different extremes.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of inputs that you get. I think that's a big thing about Japan, is there are things that you have to deal with that you don't have to deal with there. Makes you a little stronger, a little more flexible.
Exactly. And I feel like a lot of more teams now in this day and age in Japan are, you know, starting to become a little bit more Americanized in a way, but they still want to keep traditional parts of the game still Japanese. But in terms of workload and everything, they have a lot of data and stuff like that now, that, you know, necessarily working harder isn't the best thing, especially with the long season and a lot of day games. And, you know, the travel isn't as bad. It's actually fairly decent and pretty manageable. So that's one thing that I've noticed a lot of teams doing, like Yokohama, for instance. They don't take in and out every single day.
Now, I know the fighters don't practice on their travel days, the
fighters,
which is rare.
Just, you know, just little things like that change the culture of the organization. So.
Interesting. Now, let's talk a little bit. You're talking about being more Americanized. Of course, big thing in America now is that analytics has moved up in the world. There's still that dynamic, you know, where's the right balance, what's the right balance, what's the new knowledge. What kind of analytics support do you get here with the Buffaloes if you have a question or you have, you know, they want to, you're asking questions perhaps about your swing or about a pitch or...
We got staff members that are, you know, our scouts, that are professional scouts, so they give us a rundown on, you know, all their pitchers. We have reports on their pitchers, percentages of what they throw in this count, you know, how hard do they throw, what's their out pitch, what are their go-to pitches. You know, we have paperwork, and we have team iPads that they provided us to
a video.
So, for instance, after today's game, I could go back 30 minutes after the game and look at the iPad, look at all my at-bats, slow everything down. And
oh, nice.
It's really helpful. We didn't really have anything like that, obviously, in the minor leagues, and back in the States, but in the big leagues they have that. But we just recently acquired TrackMan with the Buffaloes last year, so we've been using that a little bit. We don't. I mean, if we want that data, we could get it, but I don't really dig into it too much. But
it's kind of an off-season thing.
Yeah, it's more of an off-season thing because you have the scope of a full season and a larger sample size to put all the data together. But, you know, we're certainly improving here.
Now, as a lot, you know, I'm reading a lot about people. I read the other day about Mookie Betts, like, completely remaking his going to driveline and completely remaking his swing 2 years ago. Over the course of about 6 months, have you changed how you prepare in the off season? Has that ever occurred to you? Like, there's something, an adjustment I want to be able to make next year, or?
Yeah, it certainly has crossed my mind, but I haven't taken a step further and actually go to a facility that you know has that that data and that statistical equipment set up. I actually purchased a Rapsodo.
Yeah.
So I purchased one in the off season. So when I go hit in the off season at a local high school next to my house, I just set it up. It's just it's wireless Wi-Fi capable, and you know, you just hook it up to the iPad and it shows you your distance, how far you hit the ball, launch angle, everything, spin rate, pitch speed, when the guy's throwing BP to you, or you could just use it off the tee and it shows you all the analytical data for that. So I use that a little bit in the off season.
A little feedback.
To get a little bit of feedback, just because from where I'm from in Oregon, it rains all the time, so you can't necessarily go hit outside and see yourself driving the ball.
Right.
So I'm in the cage and I actually want to see on an iPad, on a digital field, where my ball is going and what kind of flight it's taking to get me some feedback.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for your feedback and thank you for your time, because I know it's a time to take a little rest. You don't get much rest in this day, so enjoy it and have a good game and stay healthy, man.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. It was always a pleasure to see you, man.
Thank you.
Okay, Stephen, thank you. It is, you know, as you said, it's great catching up with you, and we did the second time I've talked to him this season, and it seems like it's always a little kind of a highlight. I never expect to see him because he's always having these nagging injuries. You know, this year it was his neck, and then it was something, I think he hurt his leg, although that didn't make me miss him. The last couple of years, there's always been cases where I've gone to see Oryx and he's either been there or he hasn't been there.
Correct,
and
yes.
It's always been kind of a crapshoot, but to see him twice in one season was kind of a blessing. So what stuck out for you?
Well, thanks for doing the interview. And gee, it ran a little bit long, so I'm just going to be brief about what's, you know, a couple of things that stood out for me. I think I have talked about this on the show many years ago, but maybe not. Alonzo Powell, long ago when he was in the midst of winning his three consecutive Central League batting titles back in the 90s, showed me. He actually pulled out this, I don't want to call it a notebook because it was a mound of paper, and he showed me all the stuff, and this is, again, back in the 90s, all the stuff that he was expected to remember when he...
Right, all the data that they used to the hand out in these stacks.
That was the analytics, and basically it was about, okay, this particular pitcher throws this pitch in this count with these number of runners on base in nighttime games or night games outdoors when there are, you know, teams that they're playing who have power hitters or fastball hitters. I mean, it's just all kinds of detailed notes. And
I know.
And he looked at this notebook, and I'm like I said, I say notebook, mound of paper, boundless pages of data that he said, look, I can't go up to the batter's box thinking about all this ridiculous stuff.
Mm.
You know, I just, and Stephen said it too. He said, basically, I want to know what the guy's out pitch is, and a couple other things, and then let's play baseball, because it's just too hard. And that struck me that they're still trying to do this. This was back in the 90s when Alonzo showed me this, and it's good to know all these things. But remember, we also had Boomer Wells on the show years ago, and he said the same thing. He said, look, I just want to know what the guy's out pitch is and what his best pitch is. And then let's party, because I know when the count gets in a certain count or when he needs a strike or when he needs to do something that he's going to throw this pitch. And if he doesn't, you know, maybe you can make contact and foul it off, whatever. But I just think that these kinds of things and analytics are great, but you know, when you get up into the batter's box, you can't have all these voices in your head and then also your own voice telling you, okay, keep your arm here, don't let your front side do this, that, and the other, keep your hips here, let's try to, I mean, you know, there's just too many voices out there.
Yeah, you really have to pick what you want.
Exactly.
And I mean, and everybody's different, but the Japanese teams, and this is the thing that drives me nuts, is they pretty much want the players to be able to predict what every pitch is going to be.
Right, and that's what I think I mentioned before, is when sometimes you see a guy strike out in a big situation, and he's staring at the big screen in whatever stadium he's at, watching the replay. And I always thought, oh, this is a guy who was expecting, because of all the data, he was expecting the slider away, and what he got was the curveball inside or something like that. But he just got something, just froze and just watched it go by and was locked up, because he was waiting for something else and he knew what the tendencies were, but that's not what he got. So
I know what you're saying. Without that,
but certainly,
exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Right, right. But yeah, I've seen it too much. So I'm just thinking, yeah, let these guys, give them the information they need, but don't drown them in data. And
yeah, basically, I wanted to know if they gave him the stuff that he wanted.
Right, right, right. And then the other thing that stayed with me was him saying that they got TrackMan last year.
Correct.
So they're using that data, and that he can get it. It sounds like the Buffaloes are actually trying to win, because he says he can get his at bats, you know, 30 minutes after the game. He can go back mm-hmm. and look and see what he had done in the game and check out his swings and all that kind of stuff. And I also wanted to note that the moment you talked to him, you talked about it on the show last week, that you had spoken with him, and then that same day he went out and had a big game, but he had a really good week.
Yep.
And so did the Buffaloes, actually. We'll get to that stuff later. So,
I'd venture to say he drove in more than half their runs in the past 7 days.
Yeah, I would admit. Well, since he had that big day, you're correct. So, yeah, it looks like, I mean, we always talk about the Buffaloes, whether they're organizationally they have direction or they have the organizational DNA to be a winning team and all that stuff. But it's good that we got the information now that they're at least doing their best to get the players prepared and get their knowledge up and get the latest technology involved, and that was good to hear.
Well, that's pretty interesting. That is interesting. And just for a note, that basically there are 11 teams in Japan now use TrackMan.
What's the team that doesn't?
The Hiroshima Carp.
Okay.
Which I found interesting, because they're the ones with a lot. They're pretty flush with cash right now. But anyway, so that is interesting. But the other side of that is some of the teams have it, but really don't want to use it. In ways that the players want to use it. That's why Yusei Kikuchi had to go to an outside consultant to make use of the TrackMan data that the team had for him.
Okay.
So that was really part of the thing. I was thinking, okay, they might, you know, the thing about analytics is that, even if the information is really useful, theoretically, mm-hmm. or even if the information is very valid to the process, if it's not accessible, right, then nobody can use it. And if the player or the coach or the manager or the general manager can't grasp it in a useful manner, even if it is accessible, if they can't see what, you know, what the purpose of it is, then it's of limited value. So, again, it's about what you can consume rather than what it's, you know, if you don't produce it, you can't consume it. But if you can't consume it, then it's still, you're still in the same point.
Correct. Yeah.
I'll make it pretty short. I thought one of the things that we had a bit of a disconnect on was, you know, we were talking about the way baseball is in Japan. He talked about the discipline, and that was interesting. I like how he put it. Japan's kind of a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
good things and bad things. But here's the thing, here's a thing that a lot of players point out. It's even the part where, as I said, they're a little authoritarian and they tend to be a little regimented.
Right.
For a lot of players, it's a negative thing in a sort of a positive setting. You can put that in a positive way. You can make something good out of that. This is a different experience. You know, I'm learning a different part of the game. I'm learning the game through different focuses. And I think that's something that we were hitting, and he was talking about, he was saying all this variation in the game is the thing that people really thrive on. Mm-hmm. You learn things you don't learn. Of course, I was feeding that stuff, and it's really a big thing with me, but I was interested the way he called it a mixed bag, you know. But even when it's a mixed bag, you have to learn to deal with it. You learn from dealing with it.
Yeah. Yeah, and we hear that a lot from the players who find success here in Japan is they learn to adapt and they learn to roll with the different kinds of punches that they get because they
even if it's something like, wow, this is really dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I have lived in Japan between us about probably close to 60 years.
Yeah.
And we've had those moments where we said, wow, this is really dumb. And then 6 weeks later, you're thinking, wait, is that really dumb? And then 6 years later, you go, you know, it, the way they do it is really dumb, but there's parts of it that are really smart. You know, it goes in these, but it goes in these cycles. You know, you have cycles of awareness, and the players go through these too. And when Terminal Sledge was talking about, he said the big thing about playing baseball in Japan was actually just being in Japan, feeling the difference, going with the flow. So, anyway, we're going to go with the flow, I think, and move on talk about the Oryx Buffaloes.
All right, let's do that. I have so much to talk about. First of all, what a fun Kansai Derby series it was with Hanshin. The Buffaloes went 2-0-1, but they lost a golden opportunity today to sweep that series with Daiki Tajima taking a no-hitter into the seventh inning and then getting pulled and then watching the bullpen cough up his win. But the Buffaloes, you know, they lost the previous series to the Dragons to open that week last week, and the game they won, they came back. But that series finale was a joke. It was I tweeted it was like watching two clumsy men trying to do the cha-cha,
which I'm going to assume you've actually never seen.
And they were drunk. No, I've never seen. I just imagined it. I mean,
okay.
You know, I just wondered. Yeah, you thought that was funny, huh? You never seen that. You don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay.
No, I have not either.
But the Dragons spent most of the night wasting all kinds of opportunities, and they literally put men on base. They put Buffaloes on base like it was a mission. You know, but they didn't let him score, and it was torture. And I'm like, you know, if we weren't talking about the Buffaloes this week, I probably would have not put myself through this game, because it was that kind of thing. It was like I don't want to watch. This was it was a bad baseball game. It was, I'm not going to say it was bad teams, but
no, there was a lot of ugly. It was a lot of ugly. It was actually kind of a fun baseball game in a perverse way, but it was pretty ugly. Yeah, it was unpredictable. Yeah,
it was bad. I mean, gosh, I don't even know where to start. So let's not even get into it. But
okay,
they are in the Pacific League cellar. The Buffaloes are, and I think it's appropriate given their performances. And we've talked about the roster earlier this season, and that there are a lot of slap and run guys, but you made a comment on Twitter today about them having stick people.
Well, yesterday I was watching the game, and I'm going, the Buffaloes were trying to come from behind, and I'm going, and they eventually did, but I'm looking at these guys, and Shuhei Fukuda, the Buffalo's Shuhei Fukuda, which is not to be confused with the tall skin, which is the short skinny Shuhei Fukuda, not to be considered with the SoftBank Hawks tall skinny Shuhei Fukuda, is it a little? I mean, he's just the prototypical left-handed guy who tries to roll the ball through the left side of the infield, and there's so many of them on the Buffaloes. And I said this in April when I talked to Stefan before, and I mentioned it about the Buffaloes. But I just watched this, and I had a thought. I thought, is this? You know, and I think I said, can we change the team's nickname from Buffaloes to Stick Insects with Bats?
Hashtag high heat.
But you were correct,
Well, he was commenting. He was Stefan was actually commenting. Yes, we don't have We're missing the Japanese guys. Of course, the big power hitter on the Japanese is a small guy. He's not skinny, but he's a smaller guy. And Takahiro Okada is down.
You're talking about Masataka Yoshida, right?
Yoshida, correct. And
okay.
And
yeah, T. Okada.
Takahiro Okada is down on the farm, not doing anything. And they have a huge power hitter on the farm who's had a few swings, had a few home runs on the first team, or at least one on the first team this year. Mr. Sugimoto, first name forgotten. So anyway, I had to ask myself last night, are the Buffaloes the lightest team in NPB? And in fact, so I weighted the teams by their published weight in NPB per plate appearance.
RR, right?
Yes, I know. Well, and that's on my website if you want to go see it. The Buffalo's average weight
at
jballallen.com. The Buffalo's average weight per plate appearance through Saturday's games is 82.5 kilograms. The median for NPB is 86.1, and the heaviest team is the Yomiuri Giants at 87.9.
Wow.
So they are indeed the lightest team, and I won't give
away.
Stick insects. And I apologize to Buffalo's fans who take offense. I don't mean to slight the Buffalo's fans, because I find them to be very friendly and patient and very kind. So this is not a slur about them. It's just an observation.
Right, it's Yutaro Sugimoto. Yeah, he is a big kid. He is a big kid. And
now. The other thing about the Buffaloes, the media loves to point out, is that they can't win on Sunday this year. They're now 0-10 with two ties.
Yeah. All right. Get a better pitcher out there. Although they did have one today, they
yeah.
They sent my man Zenshin Masui out there and in the ninth, and then the
dumb.
Owner. Yeah. He wasn't even local. Anesthesia.
Well, not if he's Zenshin now.
Yeah, he was not putting. He was doing the opposite. He was making people nervous, making them wake up, making them the blood pressure rise, and the
wow,
all the things that are supposed to be opposite of putting.
Probably
people
hit
to sleep.
A nerve.
Yeah.
Sounds like he hit a nerve with you, John.
Not with me. I mean, you know, but I think he hit one with the owner. The owner, I saw a story. Earlier this evening, the owner was complaining that something about not being able to throw a strike, not being a pitcher or something like that. Something
yeah, like
that
he would
nature.
Know about
like,
that
well,
stuff.
Yeah, that's about the problem. But what are you going to do? You know, what exactly are you going to do? Take one of your starters and put them in the bullpen? Because,
he's had a really unusual season, because he's had about once every 7 or 8 games, he'll have a stretch of 1 or 2 games where he's just absolutely horrible. And then
and this is,
he comes out of it, it's like,
Masui, the
yeah,
starter,
like,
the closer, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Hirotoshi Masui. And then he comes out and he's just like, okay, I'm over that. Let's go out and play ball again. And he's throwing strikes and locating, and he'll go through another 5 or 6 games where he's really, really sharp, and then he'll have a dog. So, okay, or
yeah.
A cow. whatever.
I don't know if it's five or six that he gets up to, but I know that I remember earlier this season he blew up in a game, and I think you could see it coming. He was throwing his third game, third consecutive day, and that's not a good formula. And you know, he couldn't find the plate. His pitches didn't have a lot of life, and they got knocked around, and he looked really bad. I don't know what the problem was today. He just couldn't find the strike zone, and then when they decided to take him out, it was too late. So I don't know what you do in those situations, though, because he's supposed to be the closer. So if you are going to start taking him out, then you better have a plan B ready to go from the moment he gets up in the bullpen, because that could happen. I liked what Brandon Dixon did in terms of a couple of his outings, but he wasn't particularly sharp at all today either. But he escaped, I think, giving up.
Just well, he you know he helped him get two win. You know, he helped him get a win the other day, and he didn't. You know, he didn't. He gave up a couple of hard hit balls that weren't good, but you know, he got him out of the. You know, he kept them from going into the fire. He kept them in the frying pan.
Keep him in the frying pan. He allowed one run today on Sunday, but I don't know. Working out of the pen for him, it just doesn't seem right. But they have a lot of talent. And I was out at MetLife Dome this past week, and I was talking to a reporter who covers the Lions, and we spoke about the Buffaloes, and he said what I think I said earlier this season, that you look at the talent and you're thinking, well, this is a playoff team. This is a team that has the talent to finish in the top three, especially when you look at we didn't know that Yoshinobu Yamamoto was going to be this good as a starter. So it's great to have him at the top of the rotation. And then Tsubasa Sakakibara, one of my favorite effort pitchers in the league. And today we had Daiki Tajima coming back and getting his, first start? Yeah, coming back and
It was his second start.
Second start, okay.
He started on April 5th against the Bay Stars through five scoreless innings. But they're treating him very carefully because he had, he pitched well last year as a rookie. Correct. In limited outings, but he's had some elbow issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't know, I know you liked it, but I don't know if anybody thinks, I just looked at the way he delivers the ball, not his pitches so much. He doesn't throw a splitter, but I thought he looks like a, and then pitching at Kyocera Dome gave me kind of like I was looking through a mirror at Hisashi Wakuma, like a left-handed Hisashi Wakuma.
Yeah, I saw your tweet on that, and that was, I actually backed it up to look at that, but I haven't seen Iwakuma throw in so long that I can't remember what he looked like, and I'm like, was it like that? He's good. Kohei or Kei Suzuki looks good.
He's got potential for sure.
Correct. Taisuke Yamaoka is more. He's like a mini Hideaki Wakui to me. He's a guy who probably gets in trouble early in games sometimes, and then you look up and it's a sixth or seventh inning, and he's still
kind
out
of a
there.
Bulldog.
Yeah, so still out there battling, and they let him throw a lot of pitches, and they have asked Yoshihisa Naruse, who's a double retread, to start four times.
Isn't that amazing?
But they stayed in the games that he has pitched in, and
I know
on Friday.
I'll tell you, the Buffaloes, basically, I think this is part of the plan, and we talk about how we don't understand what the Buffaloes are doing, but I think if I understand anything about what the Buffaloes are doing, they at some point somebody decided we're going to have a pitching and defense team. And so for them, apparently that meant having a bunch of small, fast guys,
right?
Who would play good defense, which they do play. They play pretty good defense, and we've talked about some of their issues about.
Hey, nobody's perfect.
Right. Exactly. But they have
executing plays when it matters. Yes.
Exactly. But they have the guys who look physically capable of playing good defense. They've got guys like Ryoichi Adachi, the shortstop, who is back today, which is always nice to see. There's health issues. But he's a guy who's just like...
playing third base, right?
Well, he's a guy who was extremely physically talented. And I think in terms of of physical tools to play shortstop. I think when he came up, he was probably, when he was, by the time he'd played a year or so, he was probably the best shortstop in Japan from a tools point of view, because he could go get it and he could throw, but he just can't make routine plays. So yeah, it's kind of a problem.
But yeah.
And this is, but this is the thing. There's lots of guys on the Oryx like that who like you love their, what they can do. You just are, it's so frustrating because they do it so rarely.
Right. They're inconsistent.
But I think, they certainly know how to manage pitchers in terms of getting good performances out of their, consistently good performances out of their pitchers. And then they certainly know, I think they do try hard to put a good defensive, they certainly have tried to sacrifice offense for the sake of defense. I think that's probably what I would say from looking at this team. And then, of course, having a manager like Norifumi Nishimura, who basically doesn't want Takahiro caught on his team after he let a ground ball go through his legs at first base.
Yeah, well, I mean, and they had a play the other day where they didn't cover first base, and that was part of that game. I think that was just an awful watch.
The Dragons game.
You know, I wanted to blame. I looked at the play and I wanted to blame the second baseman, and he was looking at the first baseman, who they're all young, so they just didn't have anybody cover first. So I mean, what's worse, having the ball go through your legs or just having nobody go over to the base? I mean, if that's his problem with Okada, then he should be even more angry at these guys. And it's just inconsistencies, and it's inconsistencies across the board. You know, they don't hit with consistency, they don't field with consistency, and the only thing they do is seem to be able to run out quality pitchers out there. I mean, they still have pitching in reserve, if you ask me. They've got guys who experienced starters. Takahiro Matsuba is one, and then Daiki Tome is another guy, and they've got guys. I know Andrew Albers had to go back to I want to say the States, but I know he's from Canada, but he went back home to get his pelvis area looked at, so he's got an injury issue that he's dealing with. And we did finally get to see, because I think you talked to him in the preseason, I guess it was, and that was Tyler Epler, I thought.
I talked to Tyler Epler last Sunday.
On Sunday, okay. Well, I thought you had talked to him earlier this season. So we got to see him, and you know, he and Romero were on the Heroes interview podium or stage that they set up after the games a couple nights in a row, because he got his first win, and then
he got two wins in a row. He won the first two games in relief. Yeah, right. Just being in the right place at the right time. So
They've got guys who can, pitch.
Yep, but their real problem
should be more consistent.
The real problem is they have, their offense is just a clinkety clankety mess of, let's hope the ball goes through and the other guys make mistakes. Because other than Stephen Romero and Masataka Yoshida, it's a bunch of guys who really are basically up there not to strike out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The classic, slap and then run your legs off. And they have some speed, and that can work a little bit, but you've got to hit the ball. You got to drive the ball.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to. I think it's. I don't think it's a good plan overall, and or at least it hasn't worked as a good plan overall. But that's just my impression. And again, we look at these teams, it's kind of a black box because we don't know what they're really trying to do. But it's just sort of tonight when we were talking about that, I thought, okay, it's the pitching is really not a problem. And they've got all these little small guys, so maybe that's it. I'm just guessing, but maybe that's the Oryx plan. Maybe I'll have to ask some people at Oryx if that's actually the case or not.
Right. So as we sit now, they're 9 games under 500. They're in last place. The Marines, who should have lost today but ended up winning, have 5 more wins than they do. So, I'm sorry, 4 more wins than they do. So. It's, it's not a done deal that they're going to finish in last place. But if ever there was a team that you would think is destined to finish in last place, based on what we've seen up until this point, things could only stay the same or get worse. I don't see things getting that much better. So,
yeah, I don't see them getting it. Their pitching is working, and I don't see where the offense is going to come from. So,
So hopefully, I mean, hopefully it does get better. But we got guys like Chris Marrero who we probably come to expect a lot of. And I love the swing. I think that was the thing that I talked about his first season here. Is I can see why they were kind of high on him, and he was a big prospect. The swing is really good, but just haven't been able to. He hasn't been able to consistently drive the ball, and that's just has been the case with a lot of their guys. So hopefully they can get better and they can turn this ship around. But I wouldn't bet on it, unfortunately. Let's make a four seam transition and talk about interleague. My early impressions, or not early because we're 2/3 of the way through. Basically, we've had a couple of rainouts, but the Hawks are really good and the Carp are tearfully bad when it comes to this year's interleague. And that's been the Carp. It has been very consistent with them throughout the year, so it's nothing new, but it is kind of surprising because they were kind of rolling a little bit and they looked really good.
And they did well in interleague last year because, of course, they probably did well in interleague last year because John said that they were lousy in interleague, so that he had to prove they had to prove him wrong once. But this year, they won today. Now they won today, and it was kind of they won today, and it was kind of interesting. And because it was interesting because they shouldn't have won. It was two Xavier Batista doubles, and it was a good game. I mean, and Chris Johnson pitched a good game, and Takayuki Kishi. I feel really bad for him because it was the perfect case of it's a 2-2 game. He throws the perfect pitch in the perfect situation, and he loses the game because of it. Because Ryoma Nishikawa hits a ball that's about an inch up, a changeup. He swings at an 0-2 changeup that's about to hit the dirt. That he should swing and miss at, except he hits it with the end of the bat and it just gets past the shortstop for an RBI, a two-out, two-strike RBI double.
Ouch.
Indeed. Yeah, so,
Well, that happens if you throw it up there. Sometimes it doesn't matter.
True enough.
Yeah, it's going to get hit. So, basically, before we really get into things, the Pacific League has 36 wins. The Central League has 29 wins, and there have been four ties.
Correct.
And we talked about this last week, and I thought it was really good that you brought it up, so I wanted you to do it again. And that's the total run differential between the leagues so far.
Well, with the Pacific League has won 7 more games than they've lost, but here's the thing. They narrowed the gap a little this week because last week there was a huge gap. They were really giving away more runs than they're scoring, but the Pacific League today scored 30, the Central League scored 31, and the total for Interleague this year is 297 to 285 for the Central League.
Wow.
Which is weird. Now, I want to go back, and I would venture that this is... Pardon me?
Central League up by 12 runs.
I would venture that this is the first time that the Central League, if it keeps going like this, is the first time they'll ever actually lead in runs scored.
Oh, well. So what was it? So the Central League is up by 12 runs through Sunday's games. So that's interesting. Yep. And we were talking about the Carp, and they were playing the Eagles up in Sendai, and obviously, I've always joked about how there's no crying in baseball, and we had a season 1 year where I just talked about all the guys crying, but none cried like the Carp's Hiroki Tokota did after Friday's loss to Rakuten.
Oh, really?
She surrendered 5 home runs in the game. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What's he crying?
Like my 2.5-year-olds, he was crying. Big tears. At least, they grab a towel and they go and cry. And he was sitting on the bench and he had a towel too, one of those little comfort towels like Linus. And he was going at it pretty good. So tears and towels, baby.
Okay.
And the Eagles hit a club record 7 home runs in that game. And the Tokota gave up 5 jacks in one game that tied a club record with the Carp, and it was just a pretty big mess. So that was pretty fun. But the Carp, you know, they're persistently poor against the Pacific League, and you said they played well against them last year, and I expect them to play really well every year, except remember they had a long scoreless drought one time in Pacific yep. League play.
I think they had at least two straight 0-0 ties against the Fighters.
The Bay Stars have also struggled, and we went through that before Interleague started, so we talked about that. But Chris Johnson shut things down for the Carp today, and they are last in the Interleague standings at 3-7. However, the four teams above them, I think it was four teams, the four teams above them have four wins. So they can they have a chance to get out of the cellar in the Interleague standing. So that should be nice. And, you know, they've played some tough teams. They played the Fighters on the road. They played the Hawks on the road. And the Hawks swept Hiroshima. And so that's not an easy way to start. Hopefully things will get a little bit easier for them in this last week plus. And we've had some rainouts, so we're going to end up playing beyond Sunday to finish up all the entire schedule. So that should be fun. And, you know, not too many surprises that the Hawks have done well, and they are leading the leading the way in the Interleague standings. But I've just enjoyed I love watching the both leagues play. And like I said, that Kansai Derby has just really, that was really fun. I think the series against with the Hawks and the Carp series was really fun.
Yep.
And
well, the Bay Stars, this weekend's Bay Stars Hawks series was was entertaining.
Oh, it was great.
Thrilling, although they did have that matchup with Shota Imanaga and Kodai Senga it started the way it was supposed to start, didn't end the way we expected it, but it was a good game. I mean, no. They both pitched well to a point. Fun. Yeah, so I mean, it has been fun. I do enjoy it. The Swallows and the Lions. What would you expect from the Swallows and the Lions? Okay, who's going to beat somebody's brains? There was a lot of gray matter up there. One day it was the Lions. Oh wait, it was Swallows, Lions, Swallows. Okay, they took turns.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and I joked on Twitter that, you know, Masanori Ishikawa is going to start against the Lions. I really fear for his safety is what my tweet was.
Oh, and then he shuts him down.
Just preyed on their anxiousness by throwing the yep. ball even slower than normal. It seemed like the ball was just dying.
Yeah, he actually threw a four-seam fastball in that entire game.
It was sinkers and cutters. They had a breakdown.
Cutter was his fastball, the sinker, and the slider. Yeah, changeup.
Yeah, yeah. Just
well, the sinker. But of course, the sinker for you out there is the screwball.
Yeah. Well, from him, yeah, because he makes sure not to throw it too hard. He doesn't want to kill any mosquitoes on the way to the plate.
Be nice.
Well, I think I saw one of his pitches bounce off a mosquito, but I wasn't sure that it might have been a moth.
What Bill James once said about, I don't remember who it was, about his fastball can't dent bread.
I like that. Yes, that is Ishikawa. Okay, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about some of the top rookies, and you know, there are top pitchers out there, and you know, we've got some really good hitting performances, especially with the home runs and the batting titles and all that stuff. But I want to talk about the rookies because I think that's the stats we can see. I think the rookies are something that's a little bit more murky, and it requires some conversation, I think. So let's start in the Pacific League. And I just had some guys in my head who I have been seeing and I was impressed with. And then you actually did a table and you've got them all laid out, and the hitters, the position players, and the pitchers. But let's start with the guy I actually like the best mm-hmm. out of all these guys. And I don't even know why, because I haven't seen him pitch that much. But I like Wataru Matsumoto of Seibu, And I like him because he has the velocity to, he really can control the strike zone with the velocity that he has. He's got the repertoire, I think, in the future to be a frontline guy. I don't think he has a lot of innings and that he'll get enough wins, although he might get the wins in the end because he's pitching with Cebu, as long as they don't kick the ball around and they score runs for him. But he's, you know, he's still pretty raw, and I think he needs some it's going to take a while for him to get polished, and I don't know that he can do that in this season, so he might not win the award, but I see him down the line being a really successful pitcher. Another guy, Rei Takahashi of the SoftBank Hawks, I like him. Obviously, he's got wins, he's got numbers to go along with it, and I would imagine he's probably the front runner along with
as
position players.
I have
for me,
to
it's,
think
it's
so.
Ryosuke Tatsumi. Yeah, Ryosuke Tatsumi of the Eagles is probably his biggest competition in terms of the position players.
Yeah, I think that's the Pacific League is a little light on position players. Of course, that's because the Central League's got some really good ones. But but yes, I certainly think Ryosuke Tatsumi of the Hawks.
Eagles.
Eagles, excuse me. The Eagles have to bring out a rookie of the year center fielder every year, so that's, I think, their new mission.
Well, you know, he's making great plays. He's making some really great plays in the outfield, but he's got the arm too. He threw a guy out at third base the other day, a one hopper. I think I can't remember what the game was. He has made a lot of play. I know that he made a great catch against the Dragons at Nagoya Dome. He made the same kind of play in Sendai this past week, hits home runs, not hitting that much for average, but he steals bases. He's just doing it all. So I think he's if it's not going to be a pitcher, it's going to be him.
The other guy I like, I like Takahashi. I'm not big on pitchers who don't strike anybody out. That's just me. But,
right,
you know, because he's a submarine guy. He's a submarine, a right-handed submarine guy. The other guy who I've liked so far is Daiki Iwashita of the Marines. And then there's another one is Tsubasa Sakakibara, who's having a really good season, but of course you're not winning a lot of games because he pitches for the Buffaloes. But you know, he's got all the numbers that go with being successful except the wins. And of course in Japan you need the wins because nobody cares about anything else.
Right. I think a long time ago I was talking to a Yomiuri reporter, and I said, well, this player, pitcher X, you know, is really the best pitcher, but he won't win it because he doesn't have the wins. And he said, oh, yeah, that guy's really good. How many wins does he have? And I said, oh, 6 or 7. He said, there's no way anybody's going to vote for him unless he has 10 wins, at least 10 wins. And I'm like, well, that's stupid.
Yeah.
He can't control that.
You know, that was when Chris Johnson won his Sawamura Award. One of the snarky comments at the award announcement was, "Well, we looked at Tomoyuki Sugano, but we can't give the Sawamura Award to a guy who wins 10 games." And you know, he was really good. You know, and he was really, really good. I mean, Chris Johnson was really, really good too. But I mean, the only difference between Tomoyuki Sugano in 2016 and Tomoyuki Sugano in 2017 was he won more games.
Exactly.
So anyway,
and another guy I wanted to mention was Hiroshi Kaino of the SoftBank Hawks.
Yep.
Who, he's not a starting pitcher,
no,
but he's really good in his role. And that is coming out of the bullpen and settling things down. And he set a rookie record with 13 consecutive outings from opening day without allowing a run. And slowed down a little bit, but you know, that that figures.
They've got two guys. They've got two rookies. The Hawks have two rookies in their bullpen. The first one was Hiroshi Kaino, who started. He's got a little bit of a head start, but he's been striking out. He's only pitched 22 and two-thirds innings through through Saturday, but he's striking out 11.5 guys per nine innings.
Mm.
And then they've got another guy, Ratoshino, who's pitched a little less, and he's striking out 13.2 guys per nine innings.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, okay. Oh, just the Hawks being the Hawks. So they've got three guys. I don't think either of those guys are going to win, but I like them all. What about Central League?
Central League, the obvious front runner to me before I even thought of this thing was Koji Chikamoto of the Hanshin Tigers, and it's not because simply he's been having been an obvious contributor to that team. He's leading off. He's playing center field. He's catching.
He plays well. He's a good center fielder too. He's batting leadoff. He's not really a good leadoff guy, but he's doing well enough. But you know, of course, what they look at is, you know, does he hit for average? And he does. The only thing he does is hit for average and play defense, although he's got speed and he can steal some bases. So he's a really fun player. And of course, the other guy in the Rookie of the Year, I guess the two other guys in the Rookie of the Year talk in the Central League are the aforementioned Hiroki Tokoda. Took a step back this weekend. Took a step back this weekend, but well, yeah, this we'll see. Yeah, he's had a couple of bad starts. I think probably the guy who's going to win it, and I think is Munetaka Murakami, because he's already, as I mentioned today on Twitter, that he has 18 home runs.
This is of the Yakult Swallows.
That's correct. He's the first baseman, third baseman for the Yakult Swallows. He's 19 years old. He'll be 20 in February. And he is the third player in NPB history to hit 18 home runs before his age 20 season.
Let me chime in a little bit because...
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
So I should just stop talking about that?
Oh, no. That's a sexy swing. I really like to swing since I saw him with Samurai Japan, with the young group that they sent out there. And I'm like, this guy has a killer swing. And obviously playing at Jingu helps him. His defense has not helped him, and he plays defensively like a rookie. But, I mean, that's to be expected. I expect it to improve. Some of it could be concentration. Some of it can be technique. I expect that to get better, but I actually think Chikamoto is the front runner right now. But that once it's all said and done, if Murakami does what I expect, which is to hit more than 30 home runs and probably approach 100 runs batted in, even though we know it's playing at Jingu and all that stuff, I think the media doesn't care. It's how big the number is. It's not
summer's coming. Yeah. Summer's coming. He's playing at Jingu, and he's got 51 RBIs. As of Sunday.
Yeah. So.
And yeah.
But I think Chikamoto has done a lot, and like I said, he's made some obvious contributions defensively. Not that that counts in Japan with the media, but defensively as well as offensively, and he's just been a really solid player, a really productive player in the leadoff spot for them. So that I think that's why I would call him the front runner now. But I think when it's all said and done, yeah. And I want to give. Props to Taiga Kamichatani, good old Cocktail. I know you like that nickname.
Are you talking to me?
Apparently not. Is there an umbrella caught in your throat? A drink umbrella caught in your throat there?
I was sipping a pina colada and thinking, why are you doing this to me?
Because I know you like it.
You know, they have a name for that. It's like something that's against the law. Thought you liked it. But no, anyway, I'm saying no, man. Don't you know no means no?
Yeah. Yes. And Kamichatani threw today, and he was, downright spectacular, if you ask me, for pitching against a club like the SoftBank Hawks.
But the Hawks aren't really the Hawks. They're the...
I know. They're the facsimiles.
I know they're the Android Hawks. They're the replacement Hawks.
Yes, but still, it counts. It counts.
When it does count.
Yeah, and he did well. 7 innings, 7 and 3rd innings, and 2 runs on. I mean, he gave up some hits, four hits and no walks, but eight strikeouts. He's getting better stats than I thought he would get when I saw him in the preseason, let's put it that way. So, and that's what counts, you know.
Yeah, the no walks is really impressive because
you just worry about stats.
But the no walks is really impressive because some of these Pacific League teams, I mean, I don't want to be a pseudo-psychologist, I leave that to other people, but if it were me, I'd be awfully careful about throwing the ball in the middle of the zone.
Yeah. If you can control it, yep. And I also wanted to give a shout-out to Seiya Kinami, also of Hanshin. He's dropping off a little bit recently, but he's playing really sound at shortstop and was steady at the plate. He was making some really gaudy plays at the beginning of the season as well, but it's a long season. And when you have rookies, especially a guy playing short, you can't run him out there every day and expect the same results. And I think he's slowing down a little bit.
It is hard. I mean, these guys don't. Amateur baseball is not anything like pro baseball. It's not organized the same way. I mean, they're pretty much just used to running every day, but they're not used to playing in the mental grind of having games every day.
Correct. Correct.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jim Allen. If you like the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, you'll love jballallen.com. My website is full of writing and research on Japanese baseball. And now, if you subscribe and send me an email telling me you heard about my website on this podcast, I will add an extra month to your regular 2-month subscription. Thanks for your support, and enjoy the rest of the show.
All right, making a seamless transition. It's not so seamless. We're going to talk about pass balls and wild pitches. Now, on Friday... the Fighters catcher Yushi Shimizu got crossed up with Kohei Arihara on the mound, and they threw a two-run. I don't know if it was a pass ball or wild pitch. It was probably a pass ball off the.
It was a wild. It was called a wild pitch.
That was called a wild pitch. Well, they got crossed up, so I understand it. But that's no wild pitch. Well, anyway, and then Kyuji Fujikawa of the Tigers threw a wild pitch that cost Yuki Nishi yet another chance at a W. That was this weekend. So I tried catching once in a pickup game. It's really hard. It's truly a craft. It's not something like hitting that you can just have a natural ability, a really good swing, and then people can coach you the rest of the way and get you to get. You have to develop the skill. You have to learn how to block. You have to learn how to move your body and catch the ball and frame pitches. And it's all about learning. There's no natural talent per se that comes with catching, except being able to squat for a long time.
But they do practice it. Unlike the majors,
but they have
these
to.
Guys basically block. Yeah, they block. Well, of course, the fact that I would say 2/3 of Japanese pitchers throw splitters. Everybody else throws a slider, although they don't throw them in the dirt like that. They don't bury the sliders and splitters like they do in America because they can get because guys will swing at them. But still, they do throw those pitches and they do bounce and they do miss and they're out there corralling them. So yeah. They all practice it every single day. And I wanted to mention that we have two. We're not going to have a record. We might have a record this year in wild pitches. because the record for wild pitches in a season was 71 by the 1954 Kokutetsu Swallows.
71, okay.
Okay, and right now, at least through Saturday, the Sabre Lions were at 30, and they're on track for 68 season.
But there were fewer games back there when the Kokutetsu did it, right?
Correct. Well, I don't know actually what... the number of games really got stuck at 130 in the early the mid 60s. So I don't know offhand how many games the 1954 Kokutetsu Swallows played. It could have been more, it could have been less.
Okay.
But the Lions have a chance. If they get 68, it would tie them with the 1990 Marines and the 1990 Lotte Orioles. And the 2015 Bay Stars for second all time. Now, the other one, they're not going to get a record, I don't think. The hold on. Oh, okay. Because the record for pass balls in an NPB season is 27 by the aforementioned 1990 Lotte Orions. The Orions were kind of a pass ball wild pitch factory. They had like 18 plus pass balls in 1989, 1990, 1993. So it was really a mess. But the right now the Lions have 8. They're on track to finish with 18, which will be the most since the 2007 Rock 10 Eagles had 18.
So that's a long time. That's a long time.
Yeah, so that's 12 years, and they're going back, reaching back to about 28 years for the Marines, for the Orions. So yeah, that's not a good look. But John and I were talking before the show, and you know, well, the Lions' defense is the Lions' defense, and they hit a lot. They hit a lot. So
yeah, they hit a lot.
So the balance things, what we conceive as being normal team balance are a little out the window for the Sabre Lions.
Askew.
Yeah, okay, skewed.
Yeah.
Sir, and I thought I didn't think we were going to be skewed tonight, but here we are.
All right. Yeah, it doesn't seem to matter with them. They're just really hard to. Nailed down, and I won't make any wild predictions. I'm out of that business after last season, so you handle your business, Lions. I have nothing to say, nothing
you go,
negative
go
to
at
say.
It.
You
go
hit your
it.
Way to a playoff spot, and yeah, you know, you won't have me picking on you anymore. I take it all back. speaking of wanting to take something
you don't have
back,
to apologize every week, John.
Thanks. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go crazy on this.
Seems
it's
like
just
it.
Just one thing. Okay. Now we have a couple of notes. One is, and I saw your tweet. I saw NPB Reddit tweet about it this morning. Joey Meneses of Oryx has done something wrong. Now we know it was a team violation. I saw that early on. I saw the drug test. Tweet. I saw a lot of stuff. What's the latest that you know?
Nobody's saying it was a drug violation. Somebody suggested it was, and I picked up on that, for which I owe Mr. Meneses an apology. Basically, Sponici is the only ones reporting it, and they said that it appears to be a serious violation of team rules that will have his contract voided. That will be a violation of his contract, and it will be voided.
Okay.
Oryx is supposed to make an announcement in the coming days.
Okay. That's unfortunate, but you know, we had really high expectations, and I remember our buddy Claudio Rodriguez in Toronto during the PL prediction show saying, you know, this guy has hit everywhere he has been, so I don't expect anything less. And you know, we really expected him to do well. And
yeah, he had a big series for Mexico against Samurai Japan in March, and it went wow in his home park. Good, he must be right in it. But he was, when I talked to him in April, he was saying, you know, the adjustments are really hard. He's been so inconsistent. The team was getting frustrated with him, so.
Okay. Well, it's unfortunate. I obviously we wish him the best. We don't, you know, I don't like to see anybody get hit for pop for drugs or, and I know that
I don't
wasn't
think it's
the case.
Drugs.
At least we don't think it's the case, but that rumor was out there. But whatever happened, I hope he gets everything straightened out and has a successful career wherever he goes if his contract is indeed terminated. I did want to mention, because we didn't get it on the show last week, that Yoma Nishikawa of the Carp had his hitting streak snapped, and it was kind of unspectacular, and that's the way it happens sometimes, but had it snapped. So I guess it was 27. That was out at MetLife Dome against the Lions, and yeah, too bad we didn't see that record go down. And like I said, it's not that big a record. 33 is the record, and it just seems nobody can really top it. And it just...
You know, the weird thing, though, is Japan is really bad at publishing. I was looking for, like, a list, you know, longest hitting streaks. I could never, I cannot find it. I know who has the longest. And I found, we were talking about it the other day when, you know, Matt Merton had 30. And I said, oh, and Shogo Akiyama, actually, the year he set, he broke Merton's hit record, had a 31-game hitting streak.
Yeah,
but you just, there's no, the,
vaguely remember
where the list is. I don't know. I have to like fix something in my database to set it up for past season's win, hit streaks or something.
Okay. All right. We have no questions this week, but if you have a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter @JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. We will be recording a little bit earlier in the week next week, or this week on Friday, because I'm going to take a trip back to Nagoya over the weekend. So we will talk to you next week, but it's going to be a little bit earlier than usual in terms of, I might try to release the show a little bit earlier as well. But we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.